Hi, I'm Jo, and this is Mama's Talk. So I'll start every episode by saying that while Mama's Talk is absolutely a fun show to listen to, it's also about encouraging honest chat about the good stuff and the rough stuff about motherhood. So it might be that the things that we talk about bring up or trigger difficult feelings for you. So if you are affected by any of the subjects that we chat about, then do seek out professional support from a healthcare professional. Often we'll be talking about maternal mental health. So I always link to the Charity Minds information on maternal mental health resources in my social media links, and I will add that link to the show notes as well. And then of course any show subject specific resources will also be linked to in the show notes. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hi and welcome to the third episode of Mama's Talk. Thank you so much for joining me. Thanks for all the awesome feedback so far. It's been really lovely. Thanks to everyone who has done the rate, review and subscribe thingy if you are listening on the podcast version. And hello to everyone who's listening on Harrogate Community Radio. Super news is that this episode and the ones going forward are going to be an hour long rather than 30 minutes, which is super. The lovely Andy at Harrogate Community Radio, he said that I could have an hour slot. So that's really great. Just means that I can waffle a little bit more, but not for an entire hour, don't worry. It just means that I can offer a bit longer slot to chat to all our guests. And this episode, we've got two lovely guests. The first one is Maisie Nichols. She is a postnatal coach, and she's got some really great insights about how the pandemic has affected people that have had babies during the pandemic period, how that has been impacted. Also chatting about kind of how to plan for the postnatal period. And it's just really interesting whether or not you're pregnant. It might be useful if you're pregnant right now or in sort of the perinatal period, a bit of insight, and you might see some stuff that you identify with. But also whatever kind of stage you're at, it's just a really interesting chat about kind of how more broadly in society kind of we can kind of change perception of what we need to be doing in the postnatal period too, and maybe kind of reclaim it. So that's really interesting. And then at the end of the podcast, I've got another really lovely guest. She's a very dear friend called Kathy. Kathy Payne, she is a massage therapist, and she is also a counsellor as well. So she is really, really well placed to talk about self-care. So she's contributing to the regular slot where we talk about guilt-free self-care. So she's just going to be answering those three questions this episode as well. So first of all, because like I said, we do have some extra time, I'd like to share a few of my insights as well, and just kind of give you I've got two things I'd like to talk about that have been on my mind in the last week or so that I thought I would share. So the first one was just to chat a little bit, I guess, about the announcements that have just been made. So to give you a little bit of context, recording, obviously, because this is a podcast, you might be listening way, way in the future when there is no coronavirus. Might be wishful thinking. But yeah, so I'm recording it right at the end of January, the longest January in the history of Januaries. And it's been, honestly, it's been, I think, from talking to people, most people that I've spoken to are struggling and finding this the toughest lockdown that we've had, and tougher than the first time that the children were off school. So yeah, that just gives you a little bit of context where of the timing. But yeah, so earlier this week, it was announced that the children will not be returning to school until at least its tentative date, the 8th of March. And also the current lockdown restrictions that we have will not be started to be loosened or relaxed until that date either. Like I say, it might not even be from then. It's tentative, but we'll see. But What I wanted to talk about was a little bit about how I've learned to deal with, or how I've realised I start dealing with the news that an announcement is coming. I shared on my social media earlier in the week, just kind of, I guess, the techniques or the routine that I've found helpful when I find out that there is an announcement coming. So I wanted to share that a little bit with you now in case you find it useful too. So like I say, by now it is a really commonplace scenario. Like maybe a news alert pops up on your phone, or you notice that the story's breaking on the TV, or someone's pinged one of your group chats. The PM is making an announcement at 5 o'clock, and that's commonplace. But what's also become really commonplace for a lot of us is that rising feeling of dread and anxiety, and the fact that our thoughts start to race. We think, oh, what's he announcing now? What's Boris going to do? I don't know how much more I can deal with. I'm already exhausted. All sorts of things. And I don't have any answers. But what I do share, or do want to share, is how I try and manage my reaction to these announcements. It can be really an upheaval. It can be really unsettling when the rules change. So I guess, right, so the first thing that I do, which is largely my answer to everything, is breathe. So it might be that you only have time just to do one big purposeful breath. It might be that you've got time to pop and do a few minutes breathing exercise. But that's how I start. That's how I start to ground myself when I still have the thoughts are racing. So I've just got time for just one big purposeful breath, the kind that like you feel your entire body soften as you exhale. That's really helpful just for kind of bringing a pause into the situation. And then what's also really helpful is self-compassion and giving yourself a break and practicing saying that's okay. So as you acknowledge the feelings that you're having, also admitting that that is okay. That feeling is okay. So maybe I'm frightened and that's okay. I am angry and that's okay. All of the feelings that we're experiencing are just part of being a human, and they are very definitely okay. While they're not nice, it's okay. The next thing I try and do is try and gain a bit of perspective and just ask myself, what is it that I can control? And it's really, really tricky to do so. But also try to let go of what you can't control. So this week I probably was asking myself, oh, okay, how can I get through until the 8th of March? Frantically started Googling, how long is it until the 8th of March? Because I didn't think to look at my calendar and count the weeks or anything like that. But yeah, and started to think about what I can control until then. I can't control the fact that this is happening, but what I can control is my reaction to it, and then start to make plans to get through those next 6 weeks or so. And when I've started to let go of the stuff that I can't control, that's when I start to feel able to make plans to tackle whatever it is that is in my control. But also, it's really important, and I need to remember this a lot, is that when you do start to try and make plans, don't try and tackle everything at once. Don't try and fix everything immediately. You've got to be gentle with yourself. It's really, really unsettling, the times of ambiguity and uncertainty that we're living in. So just being gentle with yourself is really, really important, albeit very difficult. And then the last thing that I always do when there is uncertainty, and largely when there's been announcements that kind of impact our family, has been seek some solidarity. So that might be talking to your partner. I think my husband's probably a little bit sick of me whittering to him, but I'm doing that a lot at the moment. Also really leaning on my friends that in a similar situation. We've got a really lovely group chat going on with one of the group of class mums from one of my little boys. They've been like a massive support, and yeah, seeking some solidarity and just talking to other people who are probably going to be having similar feelings. It just means you feel a lot less alone in your struggles. It means that you feel, I don't know, less ridiculous sometimes. If you know that someone else is worried about the same stuff, you can kind of put it in perspective as well. So yeah, I just wanted to share that sort of process, I guess, a little bit with you in case it was going to be helpful for you. And I'd really love to hear kind of if you are able to get in touch with me via social media, then that'd be amazing. I'd love to hear what you do to try and like mitigate the effects of the uncertainty that we're living in right now. And then the second thing that I just wanted to share a little bit about what I'm doing is that I am fundraising. So some of you people that know me already know that part of my work is running Baby Mindful Harrogate, which is a community interest company, or a CIC, which means that it's a not-for-profit business. So I run classes on a not-for-profit basis. So the purpose of my not-for-profit is to provide affordable mindfulness-based classes for parents and babies. And so in the last couple of weeks, I've launched a fundraising project to help provide some classes for free to parents with babies who've been born during the pandemic. So I've had an amazing amount of support already. There's a Just Giving or crowdfunding link in my social media, and I'll share that in the show notes if that's okay. To get started, we need £323, and we've already raised, I think, a good 130, I think something like that so far to date. We've had some really amazing support from people that I know on social media and people that have been to classes before, and just friends and family. So incredibly grateful. Also had really, really lovely support from a local company called My Life Pool, which lots of you probably have heard of. So they're supporting the course as well, which I'm incredibly grateful for. But I also know that a donation like might not be possible right now. Like, times are really tough. So you can support the project if you'd like to, in like a number of different ways. So you could share the fundraising link on your social media if you'd like to. And if you could maybe share the project with any new parents that you know, tell local new parents about the project, because I'll be sharing on my social media in the next week or so how they can apply for a place on the free classes soon as well. I'm also like working on securing funding long term, because this project hopefully will be quite long. The impact of the pandemic will be felt for some time amongst new parents. So you know, if you can't do anything else apart from just send some good vibes to me for this application for the grant funding, that'd be amazing. Amazing too. The project's really needed. As we navigate like this third lockdown, it's a massive reminder of the fact that COVID restrictions have been really, really hard on all of us. And amongst the groups that's been like really particularly hit quite hard is pregnant people and new parents. It's been like in the media, in the news. Stacey Dooley and Sheridan Smith have both done documentaries on the subject. And any mum will know that life is with a newborn is intense and isolating at normal times. So the pandemic has just exacerbated this. So yeah, that's a little bit of background as to why I really feel that the project's really needed. So any support for that would be massively, massively helpful. Thank you. Talking about the postnatal period and how that's been affected by the pandemic leads me quite nicely into introducing Maisie's interview. So the first bit, I probably need a little bit of an explanation actually. The first bit of the interview is I left it in. It was just me and her chatting about like the tech, like so the way that it was recorded. I needed her to hold. We recorded over Zoom, and I needed to hold her phone. And I remembered that I'd seen that she was recording onto her phone. We both were, and I, yeah, it reminded me that I'd seen Louis Theroux. His podcast has also got like a TV documentary about it, and it was really interesting to see like A-listers like Rose McGowan and people that he was interviewing holding their phones whilst they were doing a Zoom chat as well. So I was like, oh, okay, it was really reassuring that you know that Louis Theroux, he looked vaguely amateur whilst he was recording his podcast, so it was quite reassuring. So it kind of feels like the interview is starting halfway through a conversation, which it is, but that's a little explanation for that. So here we go, here's Maisie Nichols.
It works better, which isn't ideal. It's not massively comfortable if you're just kind of like holding your phone, as if you were just doing like a voice call. Have you seen any of the Louis Theroux programs where he's been doing his podcast over lockdown? All of
No.
the yeah, he's got. I was like, oh, I'm glad that actually looks vaguely amateur, actually, because he it's got Rose McGowan and people like that, and just sat there kind of talking into the phone whilst having a Zoom call. I was like, all right, okay, yeah, that's all right, I can do it like that. I could sit and waffle to you for ages and find out all about all your stuff, but I will try and keep it concise because the episodes are half an hour long, and that's a slot that I've got on the Harrogate Community Radio as well.
Okay.
So would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi. So I am Maisie Nichols. I have got a couple of different kind of roles that I have. So I'm a perinatal mental health social worker for the NHS in my 9 to 5. And I'm also a postnatal wellness coach. So I do some kind of private work supporting people during pregnancy and postnatally to take care of their mental health and emotional well-being. So all really about, mental health and emotional well-being for mums and new parents.
And you've got a podcast as well, haven't you? As one
And
of
I've got a
your,
podcast as
yeah.
well, yeah, the postnatal podcast. So I talk to people really just about their postnatal experiences and kind of what they learned, and what they maybe would have done differently as well. So yeah, that's
So
in the
you're being
background.
questioned today.
Yeah, it's nice to be on the other side. And
I know,
kind of,
I love that when I asked you that you was like, well, that means that I don't have to edit
yeah,
it. That's brilliant.
definitely a lot less time consuming doing it this way.
It is,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah, you just have a 20-minute chat.
Perfect.
That's definitely what I didn't anticipate about podcasting is how long it takes to edit stuff.
Yeah, it does take a long time. And you have to listen to your voice back so much as well, don't
Yes.
you? That you get
Yeah.
used to that pretty quickly, so that's quite good.
Yeah. It's you listen to the same snippet over and over, and you're like, oh my goodness, is that even a word? I thought it doesn't sound like a word anymore. Is that a word? So would you like to share a little bit about your motherhood journey and kind of how your experiences have come to shape the work that you do now?
Yeah, so it like I've built my business basically on my like pregnancy and postnatal experiences,
Yeah.
kind of, thinking about what was missing for me and what I thought should have been and could have been different. So when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I'd experienced quite a lot of mental health issues myself as an adult, and I was really, really highly anxious about experiencing postnatal depression and maybe about experiencing some kind of psychosis as well. I was just really worried about things going downhill after I'd had my daughter.
So
I
you were
had,
aware of the risks,
yeah.
and that was making you even more anxious about what was going to happen post-pregnancy.
Yeah, and I think because I had times during my adulthood where I had been very unwell, well, with depression, and I'd been through a period of probably like 2 to 3 years before I got pregnant of being well and maintaining my mental health and not being on medication and feeling really good and wanting to be able to continue that postnatal because I
Yeah.
was aware of those hormonal changes and how that would potentially, I knew a bit about it, but not enough. So I approached my midwife. I asked for some support, and she did refer me to the perinatal mental health team where I was living at the moment at the time. But they said because I was not displaying any symptoms, because I was managing and coping well at that point, they didn't want to take me on, which, it makes sense. But then I went on to experience postnatal depression with my daughter, and I didn't kind of
I think because the mental health team had said, no, there's nothing we can do, I just assumed there was nothing we could do. And I just carried on with my pregnancy and kind of didn't think, like, I was still anxious about it, but was like, okay, there's nothing we can do. So then I had postnatal depression with my first daughter at about four. I was fine until about 4 months. And then, yeah, it was quite severe, but it took until she was 10 months old before I got any therapy.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I didn't, and again, I didn't want to take medication at that point. So I just kind of struggled on, and I was starting to feel a bit better by the time the therapy actually started. It wasn't kind of like really dire until that
Were
point.
you just in limbo kind of for those 6 months then?
Yeah, in limbo, trying to figure it all out myself, like trying to find out, what coping strategies would work, and yeah, just figuring it out on my own, as you have to do. Because I think I went to the GP, and the GP said, oh, there's a support group in a pub where people meet and talk about, postnatal mental health issues.
Okay.
But I was like, I don't want to go to a pub with my daughter. And like, it just didn't appeal to me. And then it turned out that group wasn't even actually running anymore. So that was like the advice that I was given by my GP. Health visitor told me there was nothing, which I know is not true. So I actually self-referred for the therapy.
Okay.
Luckily, because I'm a social worker, I worked in that area, I knew what services were actually available.
A
So
lot
I
of
got
people
that.
don't know that they can actually self-refer either, do they?
No, exactly. So I was well informed, which is lucky. If I hadn't have known that, then I would have just been left completely to my own devices. So there's that. And then so it, yeah, it got better. Things were okay again. Then I got pregnant. I was really, really low for the duration of my pregnancy with my daughter, and it turned out my vitamin D levels were really low. So I
Okay.
had a blood test, had the vitamin D, and felt completely different. So that was like a miracle cure, which I was quite amazed by. And then had postnatal depression with her, but we moved from London to York when she was 3 months old. So it was massive upheaval and just so much going on. So I think that that's kind of what contributed to how I was feeling that time. But it was those experiences of the, and after that point, I learned that there are loads of things that I can do to take care of myself. Like I've learned about, my kind of self-care and things that I can do to look after my own mental health and my own well-being that don't rely on having to go and get therapy, that don't rely on having to go to the doctor all of the time. And they're pretty simple things like, the self-care technique strategies, exercise, healthy eating, journaling. Like there's a list and variety of things that I share with people. And I think I wish that I'd have known a lot of the stuff that I've learned now during my first pregnancy. And then I would have had definitely a lot better experience, like postnatally and with my mental health and with my emotional well-being. So that's where my business was born from, really wanting to figure out how I can like get together all of this information that I've learned and that I've applied to myself, and letting people know during pregnancy that these are things, simple things that they can do to take care of themselves postnatally and to kind of ease themselves into that motherhood journey as best they can.
That's really interesting. I think once you've had a difficult experience, whether it's with mental health or whatever kind of, not even just in motherhood, to be fair, you kind of really want to try and prevent other people from going through the same thing. And so kind of trying to inform people and just try and stop it from happening to other people. I think that's it's kind of quite a natural response, isn't it? But to be able to kind of make it real, that's kind of the tricky bit, isn't it?
It is difficult, but it's like it makes me feel so angry as well that there is so much information out there that's not actually shared with people during pregnancy. Like there's so many things that midwives, like obviously they're overwhelmed, like they've got their focus, which is on kind of getting a healthy baby out, which then is like, well, what about mum? Like, what about her well-being? Like, what about her needs postnatally? Like all of that stuff that just gets missed. But there's very simple things that could be put in place, I think, kind of on a more strategic level that would help with that transition and would really help new parents adjust and adapt.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the pandemic and kind of the people that you're seeing. How do you, like, sort of in your work, how have you seen the pandemic impact kind of pregnant and birthing people, or actually, in fact, anybody whose perinatal period has kind of straddled the pandemic?
Yeah, it's been like massively major, and I think like I could go on forever probably about like the negative impact. the negative impact that it's had on people, you know, during pregnancy, postnatally, like just the stress and the anxiety of not knowing, like, what's that birth experience going to be like? Am I going to be allowed to have a birth partner with me? There was a lot of that going on. I know
so much uncertainty.
So now, yeah. And I think what, and there is a lot of uncertainty surrounding pregnancy, birth, that time postnatally, the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I think that that has just removed control from people to another level and has increased that uncertainty for people and anxiety for people. So it's just added another layer and another kind of dimension of that, really.
Yeah, and I guess the things that would support and that would ease the anxiety throughout the uncertainty in kind of like in normal times, so being able to have a birth partner, knowing that you could potentially have two birth partners, or it's all of these things that have been had to be sort of stripped away. Do you feel like it could affect kind of all of the inroads that have been made in kind of maternity care and kind of improvements and I don't know, for people's birthing rights and things like that? Do you think they're at risk now?
I don't know. I haven't, to be honest.
Essentially I'm kind of asking, do you feel like it'll go back to normal? I don't know.
Oh, I'm hoping that it will. I think it's like we've got to try to think about some of the positives that could potentially come out of this, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm definitely not one of these people. I'm not about like toxic positivity and all of that kind of stuff. I think, you know, we need to feel feelings if they're there, and we need to acknowledge the crap stuff. That actually trying to figure out like what do people have control over, and also where can people empower themselves in that process of pregnancy, mm-hmm. and birth and postnatal. So I think that there's a potential there for us to kind of. Because like in the communities that I'm in, like I know quite a lot of doulas, a lot of people are talking about like not wanting to go into hospital to have their baby and deciding that they're going to have a home birth instead, but being blocked by the system and then saying, well, actually, I'm going to free birth then. Like, how am I going to be able to have support to do that? So I think, you know, a lot of people are panicking and freaking out and feeling as though all of that control has been taken away from them. But a lot of the people that I've been speaking to, and that, you know, pregnant women and parents are really arming themselves up with as much information as they can about what do I have control over, how can I make this experience as good for myself, and what are the resources that I can kind of draw on and use to make that as, you know, empowered as possible. So I think
it's kind of spurring people on to kind of seek their own and take a little bit more control over their experience.
Yeah, and not rely on that system to do it for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the system wasn't working really before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there were a lot of issues within the birthing system. You know, and the birth trauma rates that we have in the UK are a testament to that, I think, that a lot of people were having difficult experiences. But I think that there was a lot of mainstream view that, you know, doctors know what they're doing, midwives know what they're doing. And they do. I'm definitely not saying they don't.
Yeah, but absolutely.
But I think that people were just handing their power over to the health authorities to say, like, you are going to make the best choice for me and my baby, when actually a lot of people kind of forgot about the, you know, the contribution they had to that situation and informing themselves and kind of increasing their knowledge and learning about the process and learning about their autonomy and the decisions that they're able to make in the process.
Yeah, it's really
well.
Interesting, actually. I think I'm a Mama's Talk guest from the live events in the olden days when we could have a live events. I remember talking to her about how the system is really paternalistic. Like, you know, you kind of go in, you're told by the system, this is what you can do. And that's kind of like not a fair summary, but like just a brief overview, broad brush overview of how like the experience can be. But you can, and I said same with a lot of healthcare as well, not just pregnancy and birth, but you're kind of told, it's paternalistic, you're told what you can do, and then you just kind of go off and you kind of go into your child state and you do as you're told, and this is what I'm allowed to do, and that sort of thing. I remember saying, oh, I wasn't allowed to have a VBAC, and I wasn't allowed to do this, and I cringe at what I believed kind of what versus kind of what I know would have been possible now, but can't go back at it. But I think it's really interesting that this situation has forced people to kind of challenge that paternalistic and go yeah, empowered people more. That's really interesting.
Yeah, not everybody, but some people are. But I think this gives us a reason to kind of review that and to think about how we're supporting people during that birth process. Yeah, definitely. And there's the Ames book, like, Am I Allowed? Like, there's a book, there's a booklet like informing, like, am I allowed? Like, yeah, you're allowed to have it how you want. Like,
yeah.
Obviously it's got to be safe, but I think people do think that they have to ask the question, am I allowed? And it's like, actually, you know, you're an active participant in the process.
Yeah. And it's a partnership. It's a partnership between you and your caregivers. Again, like, I guess that goes the same for kind of any healthcare kind of situation, really, that you've got to be you've got to be active participant in your care. And then I'm sure surely the outcomes are going to be better because you feel like you're invested in it, and it just prevents all sorts of trauma afterwards.
Where trauma comes from, lack of control and feeling as though you don't have power over a situation. And I think that that's what COVID has kind of imposed on people, hasn't it? Having a complete lack of control, not having power over that situation, which is real. I'm not saying that's not real, but what we can do is support, you know, people who are pregnant to think about what do they have control over, what can they plan for, prepare for, and how does that then kind of shape their experience.
What would you, so if you were in charge, what would you have changed, or what could would you change that could really make a difference?
I don't know. I'm glad that I'm not Boris Johnson, I think. I'm glad, you know, and like, I'm very much a Labour voter. I would never vote for the Tories, but I have actually found myself saying, like, I don't envy him having to make these decisions in these difficult times, because I don't think anyone could make good decisions at the moment.
I'm very much lefty too. Like, having sympathy for Boris was never like a thought that I would entertain. But
exactly. Definitely. Same here. But I think it's about, you know, I would want people to be armed and informed with more information about, like, if we're thinking about birth and kind of birth choices. It's like, what is possible? So better antenatal education so that people are more informed. You know, my big thing is about wanting more people to be aware during pregnancy of how to support their emotional well-being postnatally.
Yeah.
And I think my example of myself, like, I had mental health difficulties, and not everybody comes to it with that. But I think the postnatal care that we're giving people, regardless of whether they've experienced mental health issues, whether they're at risk of that, or whether, you know, they're just going to go on to kind of experience motherhood without any of those issues, we need to be supporting people better with that transition, and focusing on how to make those, you know, the first 40 days after birth, that postnatal period, like, encouraging people to rest, supporting people to be able to do that. So helping people really to kind of think about their own needs and their own well-being in that postnatal period. I want more information out there about that, and practical support so that people can do that as well, like, that, you know, that would make a big difference. If I was in charge, I think, and if funds were limitless, then I would be wanting people to have, like, that proper postnatal support, like postnatal doulas for everybody.
That'd be amazing. There's a friend of mine, we always talk about what we would do. We think that we could rule the world. I don't really. I've got like delusions of grandeur, but if money was no object, and what would actually really help, it's quite a fun game to play, isn't it? But postnatal doulas for everybody.
It would make a difference.
That sounds like a manifesto kind of slogan.
It was on David Cameron's.
No way.
I haven't got it in writing, but I interviewed someone on my podcast who said that David Cameron promised that every woman would be offered a doula. I don't know if that was birth or postnatal, but that, you know, we work in this area, and we didn't even know about it, so it obviously wasn't shouted about. But I do think as well, like, saying about, you know, if funds were unlimited. But I do also think that we could encourage people to prioritise their own funds. And I realise, some people definitely can't afford that. But if you're going out and spending £1,000 on a buggy, or if you're going out and buying, like, loads of stuff for your baby, then you can probably afford to pay someone £20 an hour to come in and, you know, support you for a couple of hours a week for a few weeks after you've given birth.
And it's an investment. It's a real investment, isn't it, in the kind of, in your longer term well-being and for the entire family, not just for you. It's not just indulgent for you.
I think my
preparation for the fourth trimester postnatal period from having Finley, who was just 11 at the weekend, was zero, literally zero. I wouldn't even read. I was so ill prepared and probably in denial that I was having a very much wanted baby, but very in denial that I was going to have to give birth, and had no idea about thinking about the afterwards. So I actually refused to, I'd bought loads of books and I refused to read the end chapter of any of them. As soon as it got to the bit about what labour was going to be like, I can't face it. And actually I had three books that were completely unfinished because I had this mental block about even thinking about it. Like, no. Do you know what? This is probably an overshare, but never mind. I was really nervous. I was like, I don't even really want to take my knickers off. And I remember my friend her little girl's maybe like 4 months older than Finley, and she was like, you're gonna have to take your pants off. I don't really like the idea of doing that in a room full of people, obviously coming. There was a point where I was wandering around naked in front of a room full of people and gave zero shits about it, so obviously that changed quite quickly. But I think you can focus quite heavily on the list of things to get. I've started kind of, if I see like Instagram posts about people going, oh, what should I buy for the baby, I think I might have tagged you in a couple of them actually, just take a look at a postnatal coach or Google, at least Google the like fourth trimester. And I think it's going back to being like, I'd really hate for anybody to be quite as ill prepared as I was going into that postnatal period.
But people are. And you know, I bang on about it, you know, that is what I talk about all the time, postnatal wellness, like preparing for that, you know, the first 40 days, the fourth trimester, like preparing yourself, like even if you can't afford to be buying stuff or hiring people, like prepare yourself mentally and emotionally. And people still come back to me, and the majority of people who get in contact with me are not ones during pregnancy who are saying, how can you support me through this? Mm-hmm. Are ones who said, my child's three now and I wish I knew about you when I was pregnant. Yeah. Or my child, you know, I'm 10 months postpartum and I didn't know any of this. So it continues that people are not informed and are not aware. So there's, you know, there's a lot of work to be done to change that.
I love that postnatal doulas for all.
I might get a t-shirt.
Maisie for PM.
No.
Okay.
We wouldn't be getting a lot done. People would be really happy postnatally, but the rest of the country would just be going to shit.
So. It's all right. Everyone gets a good start.
Yeah.
That's funny. So the last question I have is, what would you like to be able to tell your pre-mama self?
So it's kind of covering what we've spoken about. There are rest postnatally, take time for myself postnatally, think about what my needs are, not worrying about other people. You know, I was really guilty with like visitors, thinking about how it was going to be for everybody else rather than how it's going to be for me. Like that was a big thing for me. And I wish I'd have just taken like 2 weeks to just really kind of recover and enjoy that time and just focus completely on me and been selfish and so that's what I wish I'd have known.
Just so it's quite simple though, isn't it, really? And something that other societies probably do better than us, and maybe that our society has done better in the past as well. I think it's probably that postnatal period has been eaten away at, and the rest and confinement. I mean, like I think my mum was in hospital for a good 10 days. They used to be maternity homes, didn't they?
My mum talks about it a lot, but she hated it. And it's interesting because I was speaking to someone else on my podcast about, you know, there are different cultures who do, you know, it's very much enforced upon new mums. Yeah. Like, you will rest, the family will come, you will eat this food that you don't like. And some people don't want to do it. They want to kind of get back. So it's about, you know, thinking about what's right for you and is it a choice and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think if people don't have the information or the knowledge that that's even useful, then they're not going to make a choice to do that, are they? So it's about giving people that that information now so that they can make an informed decision as to whether
it's definitely much informing yourself, but arming yourself with information is it's free, and it's really powerful, and it just helps make you feel like you've been able to make a choice and being a part of the decision making and the part of the process.
And that's why I go back to midwives, and I think culturally as a society, why do we think it's okay to say to new mums, you go back to normal, like you go and be doing the shopping or the school run after you've just given birth 2 days before? Like, why are midwives not saying, like, you should be resting, like, physically for your body to recover? Like, even if it's not about all the emotional stuff that I talk about, mm-hmm. like, physically, your body has been through a trauma after you've given birth. You wouldn't have, your doctor or your nurse wouldn't be saying, you've had surgery, hop off, you know, to do the shopping, rest, go home and rest. Like, why is that message just not being reinforced by everybody? Like, that, I don't understand it.
Do you think midwives kind of just make the assumption that we all know that that's what we should be doing? Because
maybe, I don't know. I think a lot
of healthcare stuff is like, it's not, it's some stuff's like really every day for them, and so they forget to kind of like do like the idiot's guide that's not the right phrase, is it, but they forget to kind of like just get back to the basics. It's like, of course you're going to rest. I don't know the midwives that I know, I probably feel sure that they were like, of course you need to rest, of course you don't need to be going to Sainsbury's, of course you don't need to like be doing, you go home, we send you home to rest, we don't send you home to, but like they say, the message isn't getting through, and so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Or I don't know if they're just so busy that they don't have time to do that kind of, basic low level, like, this is the importance of resting so you won't get a prolapse. This is the importance of resting so your body can just recover, and also so you can bond with your baby, and so you can adjust to motherhood, like all of those things. But I think, time constraints. But also, if you've got people that are giving birth in the morning and then being checked out of hospital, discharged the same day, then the message is not rest, it's move on, come on, get on with your life. And I'm definitely not advocating for people who haven't stayed in hospital longer than they need to, especially with COVID, but I suppose that kind of messaging comes in, it's like, you've had your baby, that's a normal event, now you can just go and get on with your life, because you've got to just get out of here as quickly as possible.
But they're kind of under the constraints of capacity,
and it's like physical capacity in hospital, but also their capacity kind of mentally, the amount of patients they're juggling, the amount of time they can spend with people to have these conversations, I suppose, about the more holistic side of things. And a lot of them will be doing this, it's not like tarnishing every midwife with the same brush, but and if they aren't sharing that information, then it's the system really, rather than
people.
But that's what needs to change, I think.
That's really interesting. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight. The whole postnatal period is just so incredibly important. So with the women that I kind of work with and come across, you can see kind of the effects. You can really see this kind of stark difference in people that maybe have had a good postnatal experience, and the ones that kind of are just really depleted. But I found it really interesting just from a personal point of view. I just got like, what was I thinking? Not even reading the back of the book, like what did I think was gonna happen?
But I read all the book. I got to the last chapter.
I think most people do, amazing.
and that's another issue, I think, as well, about this forgotten time of the postnatal. Like, I was really well into hypnobirthing. I read all the books about birthing, and it was just like, how is this birth going to be as perfect and wonderful and amazing as possible? And then it's like, okay, we did the birth, that was great, what happens now? Like, there'd been no thought during pregnancy of what happens when the baby actually arrives, and that, what's that going to mean? Well, there was probably a bit of thought about what happens when the baby arrives, but what's that going to mean for me as a person and an individual, like all of those identity shifts and changes and all of that stuff. And I think that that's what a lot of people aren't prepared for. And then you see those people months down the line who are just like, what the hell is going on? Like, I don't know who I am anymore. And that depletion comes in because there's not an awareness of kind of how it's going to be, or not an awareness of thinking about how they're going to look after themselves to kind of nurture themselves through that, like, major transformation and transition.
Yeah,
it's massive. Yeah. It's actually massive.
It's the biggest.
It?
Yeah, it's the biggest shift that you can get, and it's like, it's the biggest shift that you can go through, I think. I think.
Yeah, and it doesn't get thought about, like, how's that going to be, and how can I be supported through that. Yeah. And then culturally, we're not supporting new parents through that, are we? We're saying, you've had the baby's healthy, get on with it, really.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Thank you so much for your insights, Maisie. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you having me on. Sorry, I'll just carry on talking.
No, well, I could, like I say, we could chat about it pretty much all day. Yeah. I think, put the world to rights, make a plan, make a plan. Just text it to Boris. Yeah.
No, we're gonna have to do it ourselves, I think. That's, you know, that's what we were talking about before we were recording, weren't we, about how can we do this ourselves.
There we go, that was Maisie Nichols. Really, really enjoyed chatting to Maisie. It was really, really interesting. Some of the things that you can check out that she does, we mentioned that she has her own podcast, which is called The Postnatal Podcast. She runs courses to help with postnatal planning, or planning for the postnatal period. I think there's a wait list for those, so you can pop your name down if you are interested. And then she also runs a debriefing service and wellness planning. The name of it, I really love, it makes me laugh, because it's just exactly how a lot of us feel after we just had a baby. The service is called Oh Shit, I've Just Had a Baby. So yeah, that's the debriefing service. So yeah, that's quite typical of what a lot of people feel like in that postnatal period. Yeah, it was just really interesting to talk to her. I think she's really uniquely positioned from kind of both parts of her work, her 9-to-5 in the NHS and her private work. It's just so interesting to hear what she's got to say. And I think at the moment as well, she's really well placed to think about and talk about the kind of the effects of the pandemic and what that's had on the perinatal period as well. I think kind of particularly for me, because of the fundraising project that I am working on to deliver classes, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, to deliver classes for women who have had babies in the pandemic period. It just really shows that it's really needed as well. So obviously kind of finding that really interesting, that anyone's insights into what it's been like to have a baby during the pandemic. One of the other things that really stood out for me from when we were chatting was when she referred to the postnatal period as the forgotten time of the postnatal. It's just quite poignant, I think, maybe personally, because I was so massively ill-prepared for the postnatal and for having a baby the first time around when I had Finley. But also, it's just a really powerful reminder that it's something that we really need to consider and concentrate on, both personally if you're expecting, and also kind of more broadly as society, just to kind of really maybe focus on or refocus on what is needed for women postnatally, and how the rest and recovery is just so incredibly important. That quite nicely leads us on to what I've got for you next, which is the regular section on self-care and guilt-free self-care. So I mentioned last time that this is going to be a regular, it was the theme of the first episode. So if you haven't listened already, you can go back and listen to that. But it was so well received and just kind of really came out as a really important theme for mums in general, that decided to have a regular expert each episode, just answering the same three questions, which is... why is self-care important for mums? Sharing a bit about what the particular expert does for their own self-care and how they manage to keep their self-care guilt-free. So this episode, I've asked a really dear friend, Kathy, to share her insights. She's a massage therapist and a counsellor, so really well placed to talk about self-care. So here you go. Here's Kathy.
I think as mums, we tend to be the main caregiver, not just to our children, but often to other family members, so to siblings, parents, maybe friends. We could even be in jobs as well, where we're caring for others. And that's a lot of giving out mentally and emotionally. It's a lot to carry around. And I'm reading at the moment Caitlin Moran's More Than a Woman, which I would recommend. I'll send it to you, Jo, when I finish with it. She talks in there about how as women, we're almost conditioned to have to be more than just a woman. We have to be able to carry this sense of responsibility for everyone else. And ultimately, there's no prize for burnout, which is what will happen if we don't look after ourselves. So self-care is vital, really, to stop us getting to that point of burning out. We can only give so much. You know, we're only one person, we're one human being, and whilst we can do anything, we can't do everything. And I think that's where self-care really kicks in and is so important. One of the other things I think about self-care is it's not just about having lovely bubble baths, and as a massage therapist, I can say it's not just about going for a nice massage, although I do have lots of mums that come once a month as part of their self-care and their time out. Self-care is also about recognising your boundaries as that main caregiver and as a mum and as a woman. So having those healthy boundaries in place and sometimes saying no to things and recognising the signs of when you're starting to feel overwhelmed, and self-care at those moments, which we all have, is actually giving yourself permission to sometimes choose the easy option. So if it's just an easy quick pasta tea, then that's absolutely fine. Or if you're just looking for an easier option, then that's cool as well. So sometimes it's just about being kind to yourself and not always having to do everything perfectly. It's fine sometimes just to do it enough. Like many mums, my life can be just so busy sometimes, juggling everything. So I find I have to try to fit self-care in around everything else. So for example, in normal life, I'll walk my son to school, and on the way back, I'll have that sort of 10-15 minutes where I try to walk really mindfully, and I don't look at my phone, and I just try to tune into nature. Could be the sounds of the birds, or the sort of notice the changing of the seasons around me. And I just try to have that 10-15 minutes before I get back and the day begins, where I'm just sort of connecting to nature and trying to just have that time just for myself. And then I'll do the same again for 10-15 minutes before I go and pick him up later on. And I find that really, really helps me to sort of keep sane. Obviously at the moment we're in lockdown, so the kids are homeschooling. It's a little bit more tricky. I don't really have any time away from them at the moment, but I find for me a little bit of yoga helps in the morning. So once I've got them logged on to their lesson, I'll roll out the yoga mat in the lounge, and even if I just do 15 minutes listening to some of my favorite music, it's just a little bit of time for me that really helps me to keep going. The other day I had a crazy busy day, and I just went and sat in the garden. I took a cup of tea out there, didn't take my phone, and I just spent 10 minutes out there just listening to the birds and, again, just sort of noticing nature around me. And I find these little bursts of self-care during the day really help to keep me going. And for me, they make all the difference. One of the things I suggest to my counselling clients is the idea of a soothing box, or some people call it an emergency box. You can look this up online. Basically, it's a simple box that is just yours. You can decorate the box, or you can just use an old shoe box, whatever you fancy. And in that box, you put in there things that are just for you that make you feel better. So it could be a journal, it could be a colouring book, or it could be some pampery things, or perhaps a nice pebble that you found at the beach that you like holding, or a cute picture that one of your kids has made. And it's a box that you can turn to when you just feel like you need something that's just for you. And a lot of people can find that really useful and a real comfort to know they've got that soothing box and you can add to it whenever you fancy. Another important part of self-care at the moment for me is also limiting my exposure to the news. I find it just brings me down and can also get quite addictive, just sort of seeing what the latest developments are. And I find that I'm much happier and feeling better in myself if I just check in with the news now and again. And sometimes I don't listen to it for days and it feels great. And often the same with social media. Again, it's that double-edged sword, isn't it? We want to keep in touch with people, but sometimes it can all get too much. So it's also knowing when to step away from things and having those boundaries again. Yeah, how do I practice self-care without guilt? It's hard, and it is something that I think I struggle with, like a lot of mums, a lot of women. I guess at the end of the day, it's a necessity. It's not a luxury, and there aren't any prizes for getting burnt out. So in order to keep our heads above the water, especially at the moment when things are so tough with COVID, we've got to look on any kind of self-care that we can fit into our lives as a necessity, so that we're able to give the best of ourselves to others whilst looking after ourselves at the same time.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much for taking the time to record that. And it's just lovely to hear your voice. what have I got to say? There's all so much wisdom in there. I think, it got me. I cried a little bit when I listened to the recording the first time about you talking about saying that women can do anything, but not everything. It gets me a bit welling up a little bit now. I think it's really, really powerful. Kathy also did say to me that that's not her quote to claim. It's really a really powerful kind of reminder. Also loved when she was talking about weaving in bits of self-care into our day. So the 15 minutes of yoga that she's managing to do once the children are kind of set on with homeschooling, and how like this weaving bits of self-care into our day and small kind of, when she quoted our quota, she said little bursts of self-care. That's really important at the moment, like kind of with what we're living through with being at home so much and in lockdown and so busy. Or if you're not at home and if you're working out of the home, again, kind of being able to weave in anything that you possibly can that's kind of just to give yourself that little bit of extra, just to extra topping up, just so important. I also really, really loved the suggestion of a soothing box. I don't think I've heard of that before. It's so lovely. I think I might make one for myself. Just big, big thanks to Kathy. I hope you found her suggestions and her wisdom just as helpful as I did. Just really love to hear your voice, like I said, and I always really appreciate your wisdom. So thank you. So that brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Whether you've been listening in on a podcast platform or on Harrogate Community Radio, I just really appreciate your time. So thank you. As ever, if you are listening to the podcast version, then please do use your platform to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. It really helps getting the podcast heard by more people. And if you're listening on Harrogate Community Radio, go check out the website for a plethora of more shows, really interesting different diverse shows on there, and have a look at the website to see how you can support the station as well. And with that, I'll say see you next time. This is Jo, and this is a bonus episode of Mama's Talk, the podcast. So just the usual caveat to start off with, that I will probably be talking about maternal mental health or mental health in general, and that might trigger some difficult feelings for you. If that does happen, then just don't hesitate to seek any support from a healthcare professional. And also, there are some great resources signposted to in either the show notes or on my social media. Enjoy the episode.